After the 2021 legislative session, we sat down with State Senator Zellner Myrie to do a postmortem on the so-called Clean Slate legislation after it failed to move through either house of the state legislature. In the waning hours of the 2022 legislative session, though, the Senate moved the bill, which would seal the criminal records of most New Yorkers a few years after they completed their court-ordered sentences. In light of this action, we're turning our attention now to the State Assembly, where the measure did not ultimately come up for a vote during the scheduled session. And to do that, we're joined by the measure's sponsor in the Assembly, Queens Democrat Catalina Cruz. Welcome back to the show, Assemblymember.
Thanks for having me.
So on the penultimate day of the scheduled legislative session, the Senate considered and passed the Clean Slate bill. How come we didn't see similar movement in the Assembly?
Look, I think you and I have been around this long enough to have seen this play out with other legislation, where one house, sometimes it happens actually the other way around, where the Assembly will pass it and it'll get stuck in the Senate. It happens, unfortunately, more times than we'd like to actually acknowledge, whether it's because of the policy itself, whether it's views, whether it's politics. Sometimes it's even just a matter of timing, literally the amount of time left on the clock to pass something. It happens, and we are left with one house passing a bill and the other house not having passed it.
So there's a bunch of different things to unpack there. Let's start with timing. I think a lot of people who are listening to this show, even if they are devoted followers, might not realize how long it can take a bill to actually go through the process of passing, like actually debating a bill so that you can have a vote on it. Can you explain, you know, how many bills you guys were actually considering in the final days of the session and how long, I mean, hours and hours it can take to consider a bill like this, which is going to have some controversy and some debate around it?
So let's speak hypotheticals. Let's assume there's a bill. It's gone through committee. It's gone through amendments. It's aged, meaning amount of time that it's required by law to have passed before it goes on the floor has passed. And then the bill gets to the floor. You're now competing with possibly 10,000 other pieces of legislation that other members also consider a priority. You are looking to get as many sponsors of the bill to show that the bill has strength and that it could pass. You're also looking to make sure that outside influence, whether it's labor, whether it's other elected or political bodies like, say, a political party itself, or even the private sector are all exerting the pressure that you need them to exert on my colleague to move the bill along. And then let's say the bill makes it onto the floor itself. When you have a bill that can be considered, I don't want to call it controversial, but it can raise a lot of questions, you can end up with a debate that can be a couple of hours long. We've recently changed the rules in the Assembly to limit the number of hours that a bill can be debated. And if my recollection serves me, it's 5 hours. So imagine that you have several bills, because this year we actually did have several bills that included gun legislation, that included reproductive rights legislation, that included voting rights legislation, all of which were deemed quote-unquote controversial. And when I say that, I mean the other side, meaning the Republican Party, deemed it the kind of bill that they would want to debate. And that means several members can get up and ask questions, speak on the bill, oppose it. And so the clock can literally run out of time for certain bills to happen. So, you know, that's unfortunately the reality of how a bill becomes a law.
So having the clock working against you is one aspect that we need to consider here. But what about support for the bill itself? Because on the Senate side, we've got 63 members. All 20 Republicans voted no. Of the 43 Senate Democrats, 6 of them ultimately voted no, a large number peeling off for compared to what we see on most bills in that House. It ended up getting 37 of the 32 votes that it needed to become law. Where do things stand in terms of its support in the Assembly? For example, does it have 76 Assembly Democrats who would back it, the number it would need to pass in the House with 150 members?
So I think there's two magic numbers that people need to kind of think about. Yes, there is the proverbial, you know, majority plus one that it would take to pass a bill, but not everybody is going to vote for it or sponsor it or vice versa. And so what we try to do to make sure that on bills that that could be debated is that we try to make sure we come to the floor with way more than the 76. Unfortunately, while we significantly grew the number of supporters for Clean Slate, and we went from 30 some odd sponsors last year at this time to over 50, which was a pretty significant number of folks who stand with us and the 2.3 million families that that will benefit from the bill, we didn't quite make it to the 76 that we would need to get it passed on the floor for a slew of reasons. And so our work now is to make sure we're going from the number that we have to way above the 76 to make sure that the folks are getting a second chance, because we can, you know, spend all the time in the world trying to dissect why it wasn't moving. But I think the most important piece is how are we going to make sure that it does move, because people's lives are literally on the line on a bill like this.
For listeners just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're examining why legislation sealing the criminal records of New Yorkers failed to pass the Assembly this year. And our guest is the measure's Assembly sponsor, Queens Democrat Catalina Cruz. Well, you've been pitching this bill for more than a year now. So what else can be done to try to grow the support for the measure in the Assembly?
I think part of it is going to be education. I've spoken about this bill in the way that, do you remember how Greenlight came to be? At the beginning of the fight for Greenlight, and for our listeners who may not know what Greenlight is, it's the bill that gave undocumented New Yorkers the right to be able to drive and get a license. So at the beginning of this fight, one of the things that was happening is statewide, the polls were very poor on the bill. Many New Yorkers didn't necessarily agree or understand what the bill was really going to be doing. One of the things that we did was work with community advocates to educate the voters on the ground. We focused a lot on making sure that the policy was tight, that the policy was ensuring that everybody involved could do their job. That means that folks in the DA's office, and, you know, in the police, that they all had access to the information they needed to have access if it was in the if it was in part of doing their job. But we also made sure that the main purpose of this bill, which is let's make sure people can get back to work and can get housing, was always honored. So there has been a lot of misinformation on the ground, and I know this because of the trolls on Twitter. And frankly, I'd like to call everybody a troll, but they aren't all trolls. There's some of the comments are from everyday New Yorkers who misunderstand what the bill does. There's misconceptions about whether we are completely erasing someone's criminal record, whether we are going to also do it for sex offenders, whether this means people are going to get out of prison early. And none of those things are true. This bill is meant to seal, not expunge, but to seal the record so that when someone goes and gets a job, someone goes and gets housing, they're not denied any of those because of it. And it still would allow certain agencies that do licensing, like, for example, for teachers, certain agencies that do investigatory and criminal investigations kind of work, like the DA's office, like the NYPD, to still access that information. And so part of what we are going to be engaging in is making sure that I want to call it the green light model. Educate the voter so that then the voter's putting pressure on our colleagues saying, yes, we understand what the bill does. We agree with it. People do deserve a second chance, and we want you to support it. It worked wonders with Greenlight. Frankly, Greenlight took too many years to get done, but we got it done. I am very hopeful in having had the conversations with many of my colleagues. I don't think that it's going to take the amount of time that it took us to pass Greenlight. I think, in the next session, we're going to get this done.
That issue about licensing was a concern brought up by officials with the State Education Department. And putting aside whether their concerns are valid or not grounded in reality, how impactful do you think it was to your cause to have the state education department working against you? Do you think they were an effective lobbying tool?
Well, I think it was very interesting in how they actually raised the concern. You know, you can be a conspiracy theorist about the timing of their concerns or what their concerns were really about, because they had raised the concerns. And frankly, Zelnor and I and our advocacy team were of the mindset that, in fact, the changes that we made the weekend before the end of session took care of all of the concerns that they had raised. And I want folks to understand that just because we introduced those changes then didn't mean that we hadn't been working on them for a while. We were waiting for the right time to introduce them. So when those changes were made, that basically, in essence, they said, you know, for that agencies that were required under the law would be able to access them, and agencies that were permitted, because folks need to understand that there are agencies that are required to fingerprint and have access to that information, and there are agencies that are permitted to have access to that information. And so if an agency was permitted and they were working with vulnerable populations, that means children, seniors, folks with disabilities, then we would still allow them to have access to that information because it would be pertinent to their job. And so our argument was that, in fact, they already had access to it. They then chose to write an email and advocate in a way that I don't agree with. That's the way that they decided to do it. But we then had a very fruitful conversation. And to their credit, they were very much happy with us saying, look, while we don't agree with you, we're going to tighten the language posted passing, because at that point we were very hopeful that it was going to pass. We'd be happy to tweak the language to tighten it up, because it wasn't a matter of changing an entire paragraph because we were so far off from what they wanted. Again, we thought it already got the job done, but we were happy to tighten up certain language to make sure that we were addressing it. And that's something we're actually going to do now. Now that we have a little bit of extra time, we're going to go ahead and make those changes.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our conversation with Assemblymember Catalina Cruz, a Queens Democrat.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
For listeners just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're continuing our conversation about the Assembly's failure to pass the so-called Clean Slate Act, and our guest is the Assembly sponsor, Queens Democrat Catalina Cruz, who before the break was explaining the significance of opposition from the State Education Department.
Do I think that it was impactful? Not necessarily, because some of my colleagues had raised concerns, and it wasn't that many. Once they knew that we were willing to work with the Department of Education on making those changes and that they were happily accepting our willingness, they were fine, and they committed to voting yes for it in return.
You mentioned previously the green light law as a model for passing this type of bill. That bill, though, was passed in 2019, which is a non-election year. 2022, as we all know, is an election year. Does that change what you can and cannot get done on, say, the criminal justice front or other issues where some of your more moderate members or members who are in competitive districts might feel a little uncomfortable about taking those types of stands so close to an election?
Anyone who's been following politics long enough understands that that's the way that some of these big changes work. You know, voters pay attention, and the opposition can take words and twist them, and can make flyers and mailers to attack someone who frankly believes that this is the right thing to do. Because I think at the core, all of my colleagues understand that giving New Yorkers a second chance is the right thing to do. But at the same time, we have a responsibility to a larger district to make sure that we are in a position to continue to support laws and support bills that help everyone. Do I think politics plays a role in some of this? Absolutely. I think any elected who sits with you and tells you that it doesn't is either not living in reality or purposely, changing the conversation. frankly, the sickening part of this. My colleagues want to do the right thing, but politics is unfortunately politics, and sometimes it wins over people, but you remember how it was back then with Greenlight. I'm not giving up. We didn't give up before that, and we didn't give up after that because there's still a lot more work to do for immigrant communities, and the same can be said for our folks who have been formerly incarcerated. This is the start. Yes, we hopefully will get this done next session, but this is the start because a lot of these families have been doomed to poverty because our criminal injustice system has been built to actually doom them to poverty.
Would it be detrimental to the cause if this bill did just get brought up for a vote, even without the guarantee that it had 76 votes or even more than that, and potentially failed or might just have the chance of passing? Is that a bad game of, I guess, roulette or risk or some other game of chance to play with this legislation?
I would not play with the lives of 2.3 million New Yorkers.
Could a bill not come up again after failing, potentially?
I think you've been around long enough to know that bills don't really make it to the floor unless they're going to pass. And I just don't see why we would want to do that to the hopes of people, to play politics with them and bring it to the floor and have it failed, which was a real possibility.
Well, I think of the U.S. Senate, and there are bills that just have absolutely no chance of passing there due to the makeup of the chamber, but they bring them up because, you know, the Senate majority leader and the Democrats want to get people on record on where they stand, or they want just to get the public galvanized about an issue. Is that something that should be considered here? Should people have to go on record with how they feel? Or if that's sort of maneuver was attempted before you had all the votes locked up, could that end up being detrimental to the process?
Look, I think there's a madness. I mean, there's a system to that madness that they've managed with our federal colleagues. But what has that gotten them other than possible public embarrassment for a few electeds, some public pressure for others? That has yielded nothing of effectiveness because otherwise we would have had the DREAM Act by now. It's been brought up several times, and we would have had immigration reform, and frankly, we would have had gun reform if that method actually worked.
Governor Hochul introduced a version of Clean Slate in her executive budget, albeit a version with a narrower scope and a different path to achieving that clean slate. Would you say she was a very helpful and influential partner in getting this done, or a super duper influential partner in pushing for this behind the scenes and trying to get it done?
I can't speak to whatever she was doing behind the scenes. I can tell you that there were conversations in the beginning of the process prior to the budget. There was an expression of willingness to pass it after the budget, but there was never an attempt to actually reach out to us after.
So you're saying that after the issue died in the budget, she wasn't publicly or privately, at least as far as you're aware, pushing for this in any substantial way?
As far as I'm aware, her team never really reached out to us on Clean Slate after that.
And I'm just a naive reporter who, you know, just can only understand what people tell me. But would you think that would suggest she wasn't very sincere about this issue?
Not necessarily. I think sometimes, you know, the priorities of people change. There was a real feeling that we were going to get it done. I can't speak to what was going through her mind or the mind of the rest of her team. I can tell you that there were some fundamental differences in the bill that perhaps led them to not want to push in that direction anymore and to just let us do what we needed to do. I can only speculate as to what was happening inside of the second floor on this issue.
Is this an issue where you think it could be approached incrementally, say with an adoption, say, of the governor's version initially, and then try to get the more expansive version that you and your Senate colleague, Zellner Myrie, have been pushing?
Absolutely not. The version that the governor had proposed, what the fundamental difference was how long it would take for someone to be able to have their record sealed. In essence, you could have someone waiting 20 some odd years to have a record seal. And meanwhile, in our bill, you would have someone waiting, say, 10 years. We didn't pick the number 3 and 7, 3, 4 misdemeanors and 7 years for felonies, meaning you got to be out of trouble for that amount of years after your sentence, you've completed your sentence. We didn't just come up with those numbers out of nowhere. Those numbers are based on studies that have actually said that when someone has been out for that amount of time, they're unlikely to reoffend. And so the numbers that the governor had were more about conveniency for the agency in calculating the amount of time than in actually making sure that they made sense to the policy. And the policy being, are these folks going to reoffend? Are these folks going to be able to work? Are these folks going to be able to have housing?
Finally, it's possible state lawmakers could be called back to Albany for a special session to consider gun control legislation if New York's concealed weapons restrictions are struck down by the court. It's a little technical for listeners, but there's what's called an extraordinary session where the governor gets to set the agenda. But because of the way the legislature goes about its business of basically reconvening every single day throughout the session, throughout the year, they could pass any bills that they wanted to in a normal session, just outside the normal calendar year. Is it possible that Clean Slate could make it on an agenda moving forward if there is a return to Albany outside of that January to June schedule? Or have you basically put this down for something that really can't be addressed again until 2023?
Look, I think anything is possible. I am doing the work that needs to be done, and I would hope that the governor would be open to having conversations about the future of 2.3 million New Yorkers and their families. And I would be more than ready and willing to push forward this change so that come next year, we don't have to say, well, we're going to have to try it again. Come next year, we can say we did it.
Well, we've been speaking with Assemblymember Catalina Cruz. She is a Queens Democrat and the Assembly sponsor of the Clean Slate legislation. Assemblymember, thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Capital Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.